It was about 7 p.m. that night, the 12th of April 1996, on Maroko Street, Ikoyi, Lagos. The Kalus were throwing a party for their 5-year-old child. It was her birthday. There weren't many adults present, however, it was more of a children's party. About 7 families attended, just their immediate neighbors as well as a few family friends and relatives. The venue of the party, their living room, was well lit and decorated. It was quite spacious. The dining table was used as a high table of sorts. It was overlaid with a beautiful white lace on which the drinks and birthday cake were spread. The children were all over the living room and dining rooms, which were separated only by a wide arched doorway, having a veil instead of a door. The music was playing and the children were dancing, being encouraged by a few adults. Other adults were here and there eating, drinking and chatting. Comfort Kalu, the celebrant's mother, was strutting up and down, trying to make sure everything went on smoothly. Of course, it was her maids who did the serving. She just supervised them, raising her voice in command once in a while. Chief Benjamin Kalu was away on a business trip in Germany. He ran an imports and exports business. At about 7:45 p.m., while the party was being rounded off, Rambo, the chief security guard, walked into the living room. "Where, madam?" he asked one of the maids. The tired young lady pointed to the kitchen. Rambo walked across the living room, stealing a glance at the dining table and walking past the staircase, then into the door leading directly to the kitchen. He walked in. "Madam, good evening." "Madam, good evening." "Good evening, sir," Rambo greeted in quick succession. Mrs. Kalu was talking with Mr. and Mrs. Nwachukwu. Mrs. Nwachukwu was her younger sister and they were very close. "Yes, what is it?"
"Somebody they look for you, ma. He say him be your son."
"What?" Mrs. Kalu seemed to whisper. There was an expression of great shock on her face.
"Your son, ma," Rambo emphasized. "He say him name na Jansi."
"But that's not possible." Mrs. Kalu was confused. She looked back and forth at Maureen and Rambo. Maureen was as confused as her elder sister. "I didn't know you had a son," Mr. Nwachukwu said, trying to understand what was going on. "Rambo," Maureen stepped in.
"Yes, madam."
"She is coming. Tell Jansi to wait." Rambo left them and walked out through the open back door into the courtyard. "Jansi died 5 years ago in a plane crash," Maureen said solemnly. She was talking to her husband while staring into space.
"Well, that means someone must be trying to play a prank."
"I hope so," Maureen replied as she put her arm around Mrs. Kalu. There were a lot of strange things surrounding Jansi's birth and infancy. And that name, I never liked it.
"Why don't we go and see who this imposter is? Comfort, you would recognize your son, wouldn't you?"
Mrs. Kalu was deep in thought, but she added gently,
"George,
you don't understand. What if it really is Jansi?"
Mr. Nwachukwu burst out laughing.
"George!" Maureen snapped. "It's not funny."
"How can you be so superstitious?" her husband asked.
"Why did he have to wait 5 years before rising from the dead?" There was a brief silence. "Let's pray," Maureen suggested. She was very intimate with God, unlike her sister, who was the pliable type. All three held hands and Maureen said an earnest 15-minute prayer, then waited a while before leaving the hands of her sister and husband. Two families who wanted to leave the party were waiting to say goodbye.
"What is going on?"
asked one of the men.
"It's all right," Mrs. Kalu replied, forcing a smile. "Are you leaving?"
"Yes, it is getting late. Thanks for a good time."
"Thank you very much,"
echoed the other couple.
"And thank you all for coming."
Mrs. Kalu saw them off to the living room, closely followed by her sister and brother-in-law. The guests called their children and left. Maureen picked up the phone and called the security post. "Rambo," she called softly.
"Yes, ma."
"Is the man still there?"
"Yes, ma. Make a bring him."
"No, let him wait." She dropped the phone. Her sister was in front of her. They looked at each other. George looked at both of them.
Mommy! Ngozi, the celebrant, called, pulling her mother's clothing. I want to go to bed.
All right. I hope you said goodnight to all your friends.
Ngozi answered.
I am going with you, said Junior, Maureen's younger son.
That is your business,
Ngozi snapped.
Maureen smiled as she watched them go upstairs, seemingly at each other's throats.
Cat and mouse, she whispered.
George glanced at her. She stopped smiling suddenly. Her sister could not afford the luxury of a smile right then.
Let's go and see him, Maureen said. Three of them were about to go when Maureen made another suggestion.
George, why don't you stay with the remaining guests? Are you sure you'll both be all right by yourselves?
Yes, the guards are there, aren't they?
Is that okay with you, Comfort?
Mrs. Kalu nodded.
Both of them went out towards the gate. Maureen held onto her sister tighter and tighter. When they got to the gate, both women looked through a barred opening made in the gate and saw him. He was about 6 feet tall, lanky. He looked hungry, unkempt, and dirty. His hair was very bushy. His beard was rough. His face and limbs dark from dirt, as though he had been at a refuse dump. He wore a brown, sleeveless leather jacket and a pair of shorts. He was barefooted.
Mommy, it's me,
he said softly. He came closer to the gate as if to show himself as evidence. Mrs. Kalu's eyes widened. She screamed. She moved away quickly from the gate. Maureen tried to hold her, still looking at Jansi.
I didn't get on the plane,
Jansi explained.
I'm alive. Lie.
The following morning, after Jansi had cleaned up himself, he explained over breakfast he had deliberately missed his plane 5 years earlier, and since then, out of shame, had been wandering the streets of Lagos. His mother believed him.
Akunna,
Mrs. Kalu called as they finished eating.
Come and clear this table.
Yes, ma,
answered one of the maids, briskly walking up to the dining table.
Jansi, Mrs. Kalu called again.
Yes, ma'am.
The young man answered, looking up at her while pushing the dining chair back under the table.
Let me drive Ngozi to school. Then I'll go to the boutique. If you need anything, just tell Akunna or Ebere.
Have a nice day. We'll talk more when I come back.
It's alright, mom.
Mrs. Kalu couldn't look straight at him while talking to him. She still hadn't really gotten over the shock of seeing him again. Jansi said goodbye to his mother and sibling, who had become very excited about her new elder brother. She hadn't known him before since she was still in her mother's womb when he disappeared. After they left, Jansi sat down on the soft, pale blue sofa, took the TV remote control from the center table, and put it on.
Akunna,
he called after about 30 minutes.
Yes, sir,
the girl yelled from the kitchen. She then came into the living room.
Yes, sir,
she answered again. She was almost his age, but called him sir because she was a maid.
You don't have to call me sir, you know.
Jansi spoke with a twinkle in his eye, almost smiling.
Yes,
Akunna answered hesitantly.
What are you doing?
We are clearing the kitchen.
Please get me some drinking water.
Yes, sir, she murmured,
wondering why he had to call her out of the kitchen to do something as trivial as getting drinking water. She went to the refrigerator and got a bottle of water. She also got a glass and brought both to the living room on a tray. She placed the tray on the side stool and put the stool in front of him. As she bent over to pour the water, her loose vest dropped, exposing her bosom, but Jansi was more interested in her eyes. As Jansi drank the glass of water, he kept looking into her eyes. She suddenly sprang up, as though from sleep, and stood upright looking away.
Is there any fruit juice? Jansi asked.
Yes.
Get some for me.
Take the bottle of water back to the fridge. Akunna avoided his eyes. They were so penetrating, almost as if he was trying to bewitch her. When she got back to the kitchen to get the fruit juice,
Jansi heard some giggling. In a few minutes, she was back. She served him again.
Akuna, Jansi called.
Yes, the girl answered in a bit of a shock. She could have sworn that his voice changed somewhat.
Sit down.
Akuna perched on the edge of the sofa, trying not to sit too close to him. Ebere strained her ears from the kitchen to get a piece of the action.
Look at me, Jansi requested.
Akuna found that very difficult. She was very uncomfortable. She squeezed her face and was fighting, twisting her fingers and blinking incessantly. Jansi held her lower jaw softly and looked right into her eyes.
Do you know that you are very pretty?
She suddenly stopped shaking and broke into a smile. Jansi sprang up, switched off the TV and went towards the staircase. Ebere dodged when he looked through the corridor into the kitchen.
Bring that juice up to my room, Jansi said.
Akuna complied.
When Mrs. Kalu returned that evening, she met everyone in a state of confusion.
Akuna was missing. The guards were confused, insisting that she hadn't passed through the gate that day. Ebere was crying desperately. When asked when she saw her mate last, she couldn't go further than when we were cleaning the kitchen together, then she went into the parlor in her testimony.
Jansi seemed as confused as everyone else.
Ngawaze didn't really grasp what was going on, but she knew that her nanny was no longer there. She just kept watching cartoons on TV.
Have you called the police? Asked Mrs. Kalu after being told what had happened.
No, madam,
answered Hassan, the security man.
Call them!
Shouted Mrs. Kalu. She was in a state of panic. She wondered how she could explain the matter to Akuna's parents or to the village folk who might conclude that Akuna was a victim of ritual murder for money. She paced the floor frantically.
Mommy, calm down. She'll be found, said Jansi. He was leaning against the dining table. Once in a while, he glanced at Ebere, who was leaning against the doorpost next to the staircase, as if warning her not to mention him in her account. 1 week went by, and Akuna was still missing. Mrs. Kalu called her husband and informed him. She also informed him about Jansi's return.
God has been talking to me about that boy, she said to her husband as he was driving her to work. She worked at the school her two boys were attending.
He shouldn't be in that house.
Why?
I don't know. There's something evil about him.
Did God tell you that?
George, I had a dream last night. She changed her gesture slightly so as to look at George as she spoke. In that dream, I saw Jansi wearing a mask, the face of a wolf. He unmasked himself, looked at me and laughed aloud. I chased him. Suddenly, we were in a forest. I was still chasing him when I saw my sister tied to a tree. A small pot was in front of her, and smoke, like burning incense, was rising from the pot. She called my name in that dream, and that was when I woke up. I prayed for quite some time before I went back to sleep. It seemed so real.
Well, I also have my reservations about him, said George. He believed in Jesus Christ, like his wife, although he was very cautious about things of the spirit. Some people mistook him for a skeptic.
3 days ago, he continued, I was reading Matthew 7:15 about wolves in sheep's clothing, and his face just flashed in my mind. I wasn't even thinking about him. I know I wasn't.
Jesus!
Maureen exclaimed. Maybe you should talk to your sister about it.
Yes, but first, let's pray and fast about it tomorrow.
Alright. 6 to 12.
6 to 6!
Maureen squeezed her face as she emphasized the last 6. George had never been enthusiastic about fasting. He ate like an elephant and looked like one.
Okay,
he finally agreed.
George,
Maureen called after a brief break.
Yes.
Do you think he could have anything to do with Akuna's disappearance?
George laughed aloud.
I don't think it could be that serious. If it wasn't, God wouldn't be so serious about telling us, would he? George stopped the car as they reached the gates of Royal Children's School, Woji Estate. His wife got out of the car and helped her boys out. They had been engaged in their own discussions. Everyone said goodbye and their father drove off to work. The following week, Chief Benjamin Kalu was back from his business trip, and his 15-year-old daughter, Nkechi, was also back from boarding school on holidays. Both of them, especially Nkechi, were so pleased to see Jansi. She had been so close to him when they were younger, before Jansi was reported to have died in a plane crash. Chief Kalu was out most of the time attending to his business, used vehicles. The children stayed at home watching movies. Sometimes, Jansi would drive them around town in one of their cars. At night, when everyone had gone to bed, Jansi and Nkechi would stay up, watching late-night movies. This night, they were watching a version of Dracula. "I don't like this movie. It's scary. Let's change the station," Nkechi complained.
"There's nothing better on TV tonight," replied Jansi.
"I am going to bed," Nkechi concluded, standing up.
"Chicken,"
Jansi mocked, looking into his sister's eyes.
"I am not a chicken,"
Nkechi snapped.
"Then watch it."
Jansi was still looking into her eyes. Nkechi could have sworn his voice changed slightly. She jumped back into her chair.
"I'll watch it."
After the movie, they walked up the stairs together. "That movie was really scary," commented Nkechi.
"Chicken. I am not a chicken.
Don't shout, it's late and spooky." "Are you going to bed right away?" Nkechi asked. She seemed to be pleading.
"No,"
Jansi replied. There was that change in his voice again.
"Would you like to come into my room?" he asked.
Yes, Nkechi answered excitedly. Jansi opened the door to his room and entered.
"Shut the door," he said.
His voice was different for the third time.
"You seem to have a sore throat,"
Nkechi mocked as she closed the door.
Rambo was abruptly woken from his doze by a short, sharp shriek. He looked at his watch under the light of the full moon. It was about 2 a.m. He sprang up and went close to the main building.
"Oga Jansi,"
he called. He knew Jansi might be awake.
"What is it?"
Jansi answered.
"Any problem? It be like say I hear somebody shout."
"Shout?" Jansi said.
"Nobody shouted. You sure say you know they sleep?"
"Okay, sir." Rambo avoided the question.
"What about your partner?"
Jansi asked.
"He dey forget."
Rambo's partner, Victor, was fast asleep. They took turns keeping awake.
"Alright. Good night, sir."
"Good night," replied Jansi.
By daybreak, Nkechi was not in her room. She was not in Jansi's room either. She was neither in the living room nor in the kitchen, the toilets, nowhere in the house.
"Benjamin! Benjamin!"
Mrs. Kalu called her husband, tapping him until he woke up. He turned towards her. It was about 7 a.m.
"What is it?"
"Nkechi is not in the house," she said frantically.
"What? Where is she?"
her husband asked, sitting up now, wide awake.
"I don't know."
His wife was already crying. He jumped up. He wrapped a cloth around his lower body, lifting it to the lower part of his pot belly. He then hurried downstairs, followed by his wife.
"Where is Jansi?"
the chief asked nobody in particular.
"He is sleeping," answered Ngozi. "Go and wake him. Go and wake him."
Esther, the new maid who had replaced Akuna, ran upstairs.
"You,"
Chief Kalu pointed at Ebere.
"Go and call me Rambo."
Ebere ran off. Chief Kalu sat down erratically. His wife was seated crying helplessly.
"What is going on in this house?"
she wailed.
2 weeks ago, it was Akuna. Her family hasn't even gotten over it. What is happening? How can I lose another child? God, what did I do? What did I do wrong?"
"Woman, shut up," Chief Kalu snapped. "My daughter is not lost." Rambo was outside narrating to Victor, Hassan and Daudu how he had heard a shriek the previous night and then learnt in the morning that the chief's first daughter was missing. He and Victor ought to have left by then, since Hassan and Daudu had reported for work.
Rambo, Ebere called. Chief, they call you.
It don't happen. It don't happen,
he exclaimed.
Nawao,
chorused the other guards. Jansi was already in the living room. He had told his father that Rambo had woke him up the previous night, saying that he had heard someone shout.
Rambo!
Chief Kalu called him in a particular tone.
Yes, sir.
Rambo was quite nervous.
Jansi said you heard Nkechi scream last night.
Yes, sir,
replied the slender aging man. He couldn't say he was not quite awake then. Neither could he say he wasn't sure whether it was Nkechi, since it had become obvious that it was.
What did you do when you heard her scream?
I come ask Oga Jansi. He tell me see everything day alright.
Chief Kalu cast a gaze at Jansi. Jansi in turn looked at Rambo.
Did you check around the house?
Rambo was silent. Mrs. Kalu was sobbing silently. Her strength was failing. The maids were standing near the corridor leading to the kitchen, speechless. Ngozi just kept looking at everyone, one after the other. She was sitting by her mother, rocking her and saying sorry time and time again.
Go and call me Victor,
ordered the chief. Ebere reacted immediately. In a few minutes, Victor, a stout middle-aged man, came in.
Chief, good morning, sir.
Madam, good morning, ma'am.
Victor greeted, showing signs of nervousness.
Victor.
Yes, Oga Chief.
What were you doing when Rambo heard my daughter scream last night?
That time, I don't know the time where Rambo hear Nkechi shout, but he come tell me this morning.
You were sleeping,
interrupted Jansi. Chief Kalu sprang up.
I am going to call the police.
Hey, Oga, I beg. Madam, I beg,
chorused the night guards as they spontaneously fell on their knees, hands raised. Mrs. Kalu wasn't too concerned about their lot. In one hall, the two men were in a police station being interrogated and asked to confess. Some policemen searched the house for evidence and questioned members of the household. A case file was opened at Ikoyi Central Police Station. It was assumed a kidnap case. Later that morning, the chief was still fuming.
My daughter has been kidnapped, and I know who did it,
he said over and over again as he paced back and forth in his bedroom. His wife was on the bed, deep in thought, hardly hearing her husband. Ben.
What?
He stopped and looked at her. Something just occurred to me. I just remembered something. She looked as though it was really important, so he sat down beside her. A few days ago, she whispered, Maureen told me something. You know that Akuna disappeared on the first day of Jansi's coming here?
Yes.
And now Nkechi is gone. She broke into a brief sob.
Maureen said.
Mrs. Kalu tried to control herself. Maureen said God told her Jansi is not supposed to be here and that he is evil.
What does that mean?
The chief asked, disgusted.
I thought you had something important to say.
He stood up, hissing loudly. Ben, think about it. Think. Jansi must have really died.
There was a knock on the door.
Yes,
Chief Kalu answered.
Mrs. Wanchuku is asking for you, ma. She came with two men.
It was Ebere. Ben, dress up, let's see her. The chief put on a shirt, still having a wrapper round his waist. Ebere went downstairs ahead of the couple. Everyone exchanged greetings and sat down. Maureen introduced the two men with her to Chief Kalu as elders from her church. Her sister already knew them since they attended the same church. Chief Kalu never attended church. She walked over to Comfort's seat and wrapped her arms around her for longer than a moment, comforting her.
Sister Comfort, began Maureen,
Ebere has told me what had happened this morning. Please take it easy. I know you must have been crying. She will be found.
she let go and continued. We actually came because of Jansi. We have been praying about him, and these elders would like to speak with him. Chief Kalu waited a while and then reluctantly called Jansi. He wasn't in his room. Ebere ran to the gate on Chief Kalu's orders. She returned after a short while. The chief asked. He wondered whether another mystery was about to evolve. Then Ebere spoke up. Hassan said he went out. Jansi never came back.